A meeting's going to come to order for a state government finance first committee hearing of the year. And I just want to say welcome and glad to see your bright and shining faces this morning, so bright and early. I am not a morning person, as you will quickly find out, and I haven't had my Diet Coke yet this morning, so I am in a world of hurt. So anything that you can do to help me through, that be see, very good committee administrator. So just a couple of things. Today is going to be a little bit of a housekeeping day of things that we need to go through. First, there's some faces that I'm not as familiar with as others, and I'd like to get to know you a little bit better. We are in the process of meeting with members to get your priorities for this committee in particular. And if you have a burning issue that you want to talk to me right away about, feel free to catch me here after committee hearing too. But we are setting up some times. We've had some opportunity to meet with some of you, but not all of you. So we'll go over that too. But first of all, what I'd like to do is go over in your folder are the committee rules. We'll do that first, and then I think we'll go into introductions after that point. So if you can find your committee rules here. These will be emailed out to everybody as well. And to the entire body as well. The one thing that I just want to point out is item number three. We will not have a 24-hour amendment rule in this committee. However, that doesn't stop you from giving your amendments 24 hours in advance. In fact, from a housekeeping perspective, that helps our committee legislative assistant to have copies available and to make it available to the public. But if that is not within your capabilities to do, that's fine. We just ask that when you come to committee that you provide 50 copies for the members as well as members of the public, too. If you can give it to us in an electronic form, that helps even more so, because then we can post that electronically to the public, too. So just kind of keep that in mind. If we run into problems, I reserve the right to change the rules at any time. But that's kind of the main one that I wanted to point out. This committee is no different than any other committee in that if you have a bill that you wish to be heard, you just need to submit a committee hearing request to our committee administrator and then fill out the form that he will have available to you for all the other details that we'll need in order to have the committee run properly. So that's it. If there's any questions on the rules, right now would be a good time to ask them. Otherwise,
if you didn't see my
Representative Carlson.
Amendments to amendments mean that you don't have the 24-hour rule. Mm-hmm. If an amendment appears at the beginning of the meeting, I assume members then would be able to, if they're able to craft them in time, offer amendments.
Representative Carlson, yes, you will be able to do an amendment to an amendment. The only issue I have with that is if it's going to be in a lengthy an amendment to an amendment, it needs to be in writing. It has to be in written form, and it has to go through our staff that we have here so that it's properly drafted, because we don't want to have to come back and fix it later on. If need be, we'll figure out when the time comes if we need to make adjustments to that. So, okay?
I just want to make sure
Representative Carlson,
that you would be, Madam Chair, open to an amendment, and I understand the crafting of an amendment sometimes is a bit difficult if an amendment all of a sudden appears and you want to make some changes or propose some changes to the amendment. And that's an issue from both sides of the aisle, depending on where the amendment comes from. So
yeah.
I understand what you're saying about writing, but hopefully that opportunity is there if there is an amendment that does appear without notice.
Well, like I said, we will remain flexible and see how it goes. These are the rules that the Commerce Committee has operated off of for both sides of the aisle, and I think it helps us in making sure that we're putting the best legislation forward before it goes to the floor. Are there any other questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to have you maybe expand on point number 11. I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on the sanctions that might be levied against a committee member that might argue with the point of a Diet Coke over maybe some other highly caffeinated beverage of their choice. And I'm just wondering if, you know, you might forewarn us as to the retribution that might be suffered by a member that might not bring a diet code to a committee.
And Representative Albright, you win the prize for actually having read the rules, so I'm very impressed. So that will be stricken eventually before we post it to the public. But I wanted to see who was alert this morning and reading the rules. Feel free, that brings to mind, folks, feel free to bring any beverages. Food, of course, we do not want to have in the committee hearing room for the janitorial purposes and keeping the rooms looking nice and other reasons as well. But I'm glad you brought that up. I also want to highlight one other thing. I am kind of a stickler when it comes to going through the chair, so I ask that you wait until you're recognized. I think that it just helps us have a smooth proceeding. And I've seen many chairs, both sides of the aisle, operate that way, and I think it just makes it more successful overall. So with that, are there any other questions on the rules? Okay. Now I'd like to do some introductions, and if I could, I'll start with my Committee of Legislative Assistant. If you can tell a little bit about your background, too, I think that would be helpful for members to get a chance to get to know you. And we'll start with you, Kelly.
Sure. Hi, I'm Kelly Johnson. I graduated from the University of Minnesota with a degree in sport management.
I'm Adam Seidel. I'm also the CA for Veterans Affairs, which a couple people here are on, and was previously the LA for Representatives McDonald, Runbeck, and Druskowski.
Hi, I'm Brian Cook. I'm the Republican Caucus researcher. This is my first session at the legislature, and previously I spent the last 2 years at the Minnesota Action Network and time with Congressman Eric Paulson before that.
Good morning. I'm Mark Shepard with the House Research Department.
Good morning. I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Analysis Department.
Jeff Diebel, also with House Research.
And then we also have two pages with us today. I don't know if they will be our permanent pages, but Mike, if you two could go to the front microphone here and introduce yourselves to the committee, tell a little bit about your background, and that one would be fine. Yep.
Hi, I'm Dominique Hudson. I also went to the University of Minnesota. I graduated with a degree in sociology of law and criminology, and I'm minor in poli-sci, and I'm happy to be here. It's my first session, so.
Great, welcome.
Mike Held. I think I've been working off and on for the House since 1999, and I was just telling Dom that I worked for Chairman Anderson twice. So,
that's fine. I didn't give him the gray hair, I swear.
That's true.
Thanks, Mike. And then if we could have the vice chair, and we'll go around the table. I thought this was kind of fun in ways and means. We didn't talk about what our we didn't talk about how many years we've been in office or anything like that. We talked a little bit more on a personal level. So if you could give us a little flavor or something, a tidbit maybe that we don't know.
Oh, gee whiz. My hidden secret's in my closet. Jeff Howe, I came out of the fire service. I spent 27 years in the fire service, and I've got 35 years in the National Guard, and hopefully a couple more years there before they put me to pasture, but enjoying that time, and I just recently got back in the code enforcement business, so that's about it.
Good morning. Representative Cindy Pugh from Chanhassen, and I represent the area around Lake Minnetonka. I've been married to my high school sweetheart, Jack, for 34 years and have two grown kids out of state, so empty nesters and time to invest in this. And I think that's it.
Hi, John Petersburg. I guess it is on. I'm a church administrator in my regular life away from St. Paul. It's a large ELC Lutheran church down in Owatonna, about 4,000 members, close to a $2 million budget. I oversee the general operations, daily operations of it, and I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. I'm Sheldon Johnson. I represent Southeast St. Paul, and let's see, I'm a retired juvenile and adult probation officer. Did that for about 35 years, and my oldest daughter got married this summer, and that was good to see finally occur.
Good morning. I'm Jim Nash. I represent District 47A. Something you don't know. I've got six kids. Have been married for 25 years, as you all got to see on the day we got sworn in. And I own an IT analyst firm in my real world job.
Good morning, members. Tony Albright. In my work a day outside of this, I'm a financial analyst for pensions. Spent 25 years in that career.
Hi, and I'm Carolyn Lane, and five grown kids, some grandchildren. My youngest daughter just got married, so they're all on their way.
And I'm Lyndon Carlson. I worked in the private sector for a company called Western Oil and Fuel for several years. It was bought out by Conoco, and about that period of time, I decided that I would like to go into teaching. So I ended up teaching for about 34 years in the Minneapolis Public Schools, and then another year in southern Minnesota. Being that people are mentioning children, I've got three children, six grandchildren. Two of them are in the United States Marines right now. One is in Okinawa. And my youngest son just told us over the holidays that he got engaged, and the young woman that he is engaged to is from Chile. So they're going through the process of immigration when you bring a fiancé into the country, and that's a little bit complicated. They met in L.A., and she went back to Chile a couple of years ago, and so you have to have had personal contact within 2 years. So my wife is out in L.A. right now, and they're planning a trip to Chile. So that's a little known fact, I guess.
Hi, I'm Representative Michael Nelson. I represent the southern part of Brooklyn Park. I've got three grown sons, I guess that's it.
Jim Geldman, I'm the VFL Caucus Research to the committee. I have four children, two biological, and two daughters adopted from Cambodia.
Very good. Representative Anderson.
Good morning. Representative Mark Anderson. I represent District 9A, which is up around the Brainerd area. I've got two careers outside of this. One, I'm a professional pilot. The other, my wife and I just opened up a brewery up on Gull Lake. The name of it is called Gull Dam Brewing. I see that it's not listed as far as number 11 under the rules. It'd be nice if we could. One thing that you might not know about me, unless you were a freshman in my class, is that I'm listed in the World Aviation and Space Records book.
My name is Representative Bob Lunan. I represent the Shakopee area. Married with four grown children. I've already texted my three sons about the Gull Dam Brewery. And so one of them will be there this weekend because he's going to be fishing up in that area. My background is I come from an insurance background. I've taught insurance and real estate continuing ed classes for 29 years and own an insurance agency for 32 years.
And State Representative Bob Detmer from the Forest Lake area, which includes parts of Chisago County and Washington County. My wife and I have three grown children, seven grandchildren, one just born on December 29th. So they got that tax break there. Our sons are graduates of West Point Military Academy, class of 2000. They've got 15 years in. I'm a retired Army warrant officer of 25 years. And I chair the Military Affairs Division. I'll be working closely with this committee as we go forward with some good military issues for our veterans this year.
Good morning. I'm Jen Schultz. I represent Duluth. This was Tom Huntley's seat for 22 years. I am a faculty member at UMD in the Department of Economics. I've spent about 20 years studying health policy, and I've worked at United Health Group in the past as well. I have two young children, two boys, and my husband is a criminologist.
Very good. Well, welcome. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I graduated from UMD, so good college. But something that you perhaps don't know about me is I play tenor sax. Not very well, but it's something that I enjoy. So with that, we are lucky today to have Helen Roberts and Mark Shepherd. They are going to give us a little bit of a historical perspective for this committee and our responsibilities. So why don't we, if you could, do you guys mind going to the front? It's just easier for people to see. Is that okay? And they're just, if you look in your packet too, you'll see the materials that they're going to go over. We'll have them point us to the first document that they're going to have us review. Okay? And when you guys get up there, if you could please state your name for the record. Ms. Roberts?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. The first document that you have in your packet is, it looks like this. It's a chart that shows the various accounts that are under the jurisdiction of this committee. And I'm not going to read through all of them, but they're grouped so you can see some of the different sorts of agencies that we have authority over, including the legislature and constitutional offices, various state agencies, including the Department of Administration, Minnesota Management and Budget, Department of Revenue, and then some smaller agencies, the National Guard under the Military Affairs Department and Veterans Affairs, the councils, the minority councils. We have some of the pension aids, those related to primarily to the para MRF aids and then the teacher state aids. The local pension aids are carried in the tax bill. And then coming back to this committee are the gambling agencies, the Lottery, Lawful Gambling Board, and Racing Commission. Those were in the Commerce Committee in the prior session. And some other changes, just to note real quickly, some human rights is another new agency that has not been under the jurisdiction of state government finance before. And then two accounts that were in this committee in the prior session, the Science Museum and PFA have been moved to other agents or to other committees. The second document that I'm just going to go over real quickly is this one-page real brief overview. And Madam Chair, you had asked us to look back at the last two omnibus bills from the 2011 session and then the 2013 session, both looking at the appropriations that were made and the language. And this first one-page document just is a really high-level summary of the appropriations that were made in both bills, and these are general fund appropriations only, adjusted to match the change in accounts between 2011 and 2013. So you can see that in 2011, the omnibus bill had total general fund appropriations of $887.5 million, and the 2013 omnibus bill had total appropriations of $914.6 million. And then I've also listed out the various other bills that were passed in the session that impacted the state government finance accounts, and I think you'll see that the most significant other bills that impact this agent or this committee are the pension bills. Now I'm going to go to the spreadsheet that looks like this, that is the more detailed comparison between 2011 and 2013. And I should say, since we have a lot of accounts and agencies, it can take some time to walk through this. If I'm going too fast, please let me know. If I'm getting into too much detail, please let me know.
And Ms. Roberts, I think that's a great pause moment. Are there any questions up to this point on the accounts that were presented at all from anyone? Okay, Ms. Roberts.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, the way the spreadsheet is set up, you can see there's two groupings of columns. The first, the 2011 and 2012 sessions, and then the second, the 2013 and 2014 sessions. And what the spreadsheet does is it compares, it shows the total appropriations that were made in the omnibus bills and then compares them to the base as was established going into each session. So you can see both the dollar change and the percentage change from base that were included in each omnibus bill. And for new members, the base is set by the second year appropriation from the prior budget session. We just basically, those are rolled over to create the base with the exception of some forecasted programs and other adjustments that happen. So I'm going to go through and compare 2011 to 2013, and then you will also see there's a column for the supplemental changes that were made in the second year session, so if you have questions about those, please let me know. And I think you can see that overall, in the 2011 session, for the most part, agencies were reduced from base, and in the 2013 session, most agencies received an increase from base. Starting with the legislature, you'll see that overall, in the 2011 omnibus bill, there was a 5% reduction to the legislative offices, and in the 2013 bill, there was an overall 10% increase. For the constitutional offices, you'll see in 2011, there was most of the offices received a 5% increase. The Secretary of State's office had a smaller cut because the cut was not applied to their elections division, which has a maintenance of effort requirement. Similarly, if you look over to the 2013 column, which shows the percentage change from base, you'll see that the governor's office and attorney general received 5% increases. The real thing to note here, because it looks like a huge cut, is the state auditor's office. And what that represents is a change in the way that their audit division practice was funded. Prior to 2013, that division was funded through a direct general fund appropriation, and the auditor would then charge the first class cities or counties for the cost of the audits, but those revenues went into the general fund, not back to the state auditor. In 2013, the legislature changed this only for the audit practice division so that the Office of the State Auditor now keeps those revenues and functions as an enterprise fund. So you see what looks like a really dramatic cut to their general fund budget, but that is really representing that entire function getting moved off the general fund entirely. And there was a corresponding loss of revenue. So, any questions?
Members, any questions? Ms. Roberts?
Continuing on, the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, again, you'll see they received sort of the standard 5% reduction in 2011. In the 2013 session, there was an increase funding of 45%, and that funding was generally for their IT upgrades. You may know that they've had some experience with not having necessarily up-to-date or accurate electronic records, and they're moving towards improving that and improving their web-based filings. The investment board, administrative hearings, again, agencies that received reductions in 2011, and there was a small increase for administrative hearings in the 2013 session. The Office of Enterprise Technology, primarily this office is not funded through the general fund. It's funded through the fees that are charged to agencies for the services that it provides. So the funding here provides a really small part of the office's overall funding. Again, they had a reduction in 2011 that was 5%. And then you'll see in 2013, again, a significant reduction of almost 60% of their general fund portions. And that represents savings that the office recognized as a part of the IT consolidation that was passed in 2011. And I think Mr. Shepherd will probably have something more to say on that, but as a result of that, they found savings both in their security portion of their office and then also in sort of the strategic leadership, and so that's why you see a more significant reduction.
And Ms. Roberts, I don't know if this is for you or for Mr. Shepherd, but did that result in higher fees then, or was that truly a reduction there?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I know that the legislative auditor is currently doing a financial audit of minute services billing to agencies. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty, I'm not sure that I can say at this point what the outcome was. So again, this represents the reduction to the general fund side, but as you point out, there may be some increases to agencies on the billing side.
And remind me again, Ms. Roberts, when is that report coming due?
I believe it's due this month, but okay. I'll double check on that.
Right. Thank you. Ms. Roberts.
Moving on, to the Department of Administration. I'll just note that they have two major programs, government and citizen services, and then in their administrative management piece. And there's a lot of variety under Department of Administration. So if members want to have more detail on that, I can provide it to you. This is the level that we appropriate at, but they have really a large variety of functions that they do. I think the probably the most significant difference to note between the two sessions that deviates from the pattern is the increase in 2013 to public broadcasting. You'll see that the public broadcasting grants were increased by almost 55%. I also just want to point out that in lieu of rent appropriation, because that's something that may get some discussion this session in relation, just to let members know that the House and Senate do not pay rent through their operating budgets the way that state agencies do. And so this appropriation right now is for the space occupied in the SOB and in the Capitol by the House and Senate, and we directly appropriate that to the Department of Administration.
And Ms. Roberts, has it always been that case? Is that how we've always done it, or do you know?
Madam Chair, it's been done that way as long as I've been here, so from late 1990s. Okay. I don't know if it I can find out if there was a different
approach. Just curious. All right. Ms. Roberts?
Continuing on, almost to the bottom of this page, you'll see the Capital Area Architecture Board, like other agencies, received a 5% cut in the 2011 session and then a 3% increase in the 2013 session. Minnesota Management Budget, again, received sort of the more standard reduction in the 2011 session. In the 2013 session, they did receive a significant increase of 33% in their general fund, and this was primarily for some of the IT projects that the department has been involved in. Members that are returning will know that the department has a new budget system that just went online in 2013, and they're continuing with improvements and modifications to that system. There's also a new fiscal note system that is just being rolled out this session, and there will be a new capital budget system that the department is working on. So the majority of that funding was for those IT projects.
We'll just pause a moment here. Ms. Roberts, did anyone have any questions on the first page at all? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to go back to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. When you mentioned, Ms. Roberts, the increase was for technology. I was interested, is that ongoing or was that a one-time appropriation for the upgrade?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I believe it was ongoing.
Representative Carlson.
That answers the question, I guess. We may, when we get to that, my initial reaction, Madam Chair, when you've upgraded something at some point, I would assume you've completed that work, but maybe we'll hear from the board as to why it has to be ongoing.
Sure.
At the appropriate time.
Thank you. Good point. Representative Howe.
Yes, Madam Chair. My question relates to, do we know, when we talk about that in lieu of rent and that allocation, do we know yet how this new Senate office building is going to affect us, or how that's going to be, is that going to be an increase in that, that in lieu of rent, and how that will be appropriate?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and Representative Howe, we currently don't have the request for the appropriation that's going to cover both the debt service and the operating costs for the new Senate office building. I have been told from Department of Administration that that will not be included in the in lieu of rent appropriation. So I believe that that will be requested separately. But I think we would be interested in the interactions with the in lieu of rent, because there's a lot of change happening in the Capitol and in the SOB, and how that would impact that appropriation.
Representative Howe. Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank Thank you, Madam Chair. You've mentioned in each one of the categories in some form an upgrade technologically, and I'm wondering if you could speak to, is that a coordinated effort across all these agencies, or are they doing this unilaterally inside each one of their agencies?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and Representative, as a result of the 2011 legislation that consolidated all IT functions under what was formerly known as Office of Enterprise Technology, now Minute Services, all IT employees are actually employees of Minute rather than the agency that they're housed in. So the intention of that consolidation was that there would be collaboration and that these sorts of projects wouldn't be happening in agency silos. I think it's a good question how far that has gone in the since the consolidation happened, and would be a good question for Minute Services.
Mm-hmm. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just maybe to follow on, are we conversant on a common platform, a common technology platform, or are we siloing each one of our agencies with different technology that cannot, in a sense, be cross-fertilized with any of the other organizations? So are we duplicating efforts with the type of platforms we're using?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair.
She's waving a white flag there.
I'm not an IT person. I think, the intention of the consolidation is so that there would be more common platforms, and I believe that Minute is working towards that. They're working with the Campaign Finance Board, for example. Again, to what extent they've had success across the enterprise, I think we'd have to ask them.
I think Representative Albright, you and Representative Carlson have raised a good point. We maybe need to have them come in and give us a little conversation about this issue. I know Representative Johnson had expressed some interest on this issue, too, so we'll spend some time at some point to dig into this. Representative Nash, I think you had some interest as well, too. So.
Thank you, Madam
Good
Chair.
Questions, guys. I really appreciate it. Representative Kahn.
Well, there was a statement that was made earlier this year at some point, last year, saying that the consolidation had saved $127 million over the first 3 years of its existence. That might account for the big decrease in the funding to the Office of Enterprise Technology. Because we went, instead of having 38 separate silos, we went to one separate silo. But I do know we were moving towards it instead of doing it exactly, and I'm not totally sure what the time scale was on that.
And Representative Kahn, I'm not sure if you were here at that point, but one of the questions I had is, has that changed their fee schedule that they have then too? And I think that's a question we'll have to ask them at some point, unless you've got
Well, they don't have their fee schedule. I don't know how their fee schedule quite works, since now they have all the employees. Mm-hmm. So what they used to do is they used to collect fees from the agencies for services that they rendered. Mm-hmm. But now it's their staff people that are doing it, so I'm not sure how that works at all.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. When Minute comes in, could we ask that they also brief us not only on savings that they've achieved from consolidation of employees, but also from a hardware and software platform? That's one area that I'm particularly interested in.
That's great. Perfect. All right.
And I just understand,
Representative
that,
Kahn, if you could.
Madam Chairman, I'm sorry. I just understand that the...
I don't know what...
They've just had a transition in the leadership, so their assistant person is, so they don't even have a permanent department head, so you might not want to have that right away.
Ms. Roberts, if you could.
Members, I'm now on the second page of the spreadsheet. At the top of the page, you'll see the Department of Revenue, which is by far the largest account or agency that we have in terms of general fund spending in this committee. And here you'll see a little deviation from the pattern between 2011 and 2013 in that Department of Revenue actually received an increase in the 2011 session. And this was a result of giving them more money to identify additional taxes that are owed to the state. And members that have been here for a while will know that this has been a pattern that the legislature has done over several budget years of giving the Department of Revenue more money to increase their compliance efforts. And then as a result, we offset the spending in this division by the projected new revenues that would come in from these efforts. So there was an increase in the general fund spending to Department of Revenue, but there was also an offsetting increase in projected tax revenues. And then in 2013, the department actually received a reduction in their general fund appropriation, and this was related to tax system savings that the department identified for a variety of things. One thing that received a lot of attention was a proposal to replace paper check refunds with debit cards, and I believe the department had to back off that, but they still received the reduction for the projected savings for that. Going on, now we have a bunch of really small agencies that won't go into detail, but you can see they, in general, received the same pattern of a reduction in 2011 of around 5%. And the Amateur Sports Commission is one. The various councils, Council on Black Minnesotans, Council on Chicano Latino Affairs, the Asian Pacific Council, and the Council on Indian Affairs, you'll note in the 2013 session that they did receive increases that were probably above the average compared to some other agencies, ranging from 21% to about 40% in their general fund appropriations.
And Ms. Roberts, what was the, was that a IT again, or was it something else?
Madam Chair, I believe that was just the desire of the committee at that time to give them more resources.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could it be, Ms. Roberts, could it be characterized, looking at the numbers, the dollar amount is not that large, that because of the size of the agencies being so small, any additional money given to them will look large compared to their overall budget?
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, I believe that's fair. When we're looking at percentages, of course, they're dependent. They can look a little distorted depending on the size of the starting point.
Ms. Roberts?
Continuing on, just a note, Explore Minnesota Tourism was included in this committee in the 2011 session, but not in the 2013 session, and is not in the list of accounts for this session. But I just included it to make the numbers balance. Minnesota Historical Society is another agency in, that received, again, a 7.3% reduction in 2011 and a 5% reduction in 2013. The State Arts Board was reduced by 10% in 2011 and received a pretty small increase in 2013. There's the Minnesota Humanities Commission. The PFA is another, again, something that I've included on here that was in this committee in the 2011 session and is not in this committee currently. And also the Science Museum is another one that has been moved it to the Environment Committee. Moving down, I think you'll see the various retirement aids that are covered in this committee. I should note the MSRS accounts that you see are for the pre-1997 legislators and constitutional offices. So this is not related to current legislators' retirement. It's the program that was in place before that was not fully funded as they go, and as a result, we're continuing to pay for some of those obligations. PERA, you'll see that amount is a result of the Minneapolis Employee Retirement Fund merge into PERA, and we do know that there may be a possibility of some changes to this aid amount based on the last valuation. So there will be more information coming on that. And then finally, teachers' retirement aid. Again, these are the results of primarily of the merger of the Minneapolis Teachers Fund into TRA, and then also the upcoming merger of the Duluth Teachers Fund and the accompanying state aid that went along with those mergers. And finally, on the last page, you'll see Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs. And in both, in 2011, Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs were one of the three agencies that received increases. I talked about Department of Revenue before. You'll see that Military Affairs also received an increase for its enlistment incentives program, and then Vets Affairs received increases for a variety of initiatives. And then in the 2013 session, Military Affairs was held at their base level funding. That was actually at the request of the department. They did not request any additional funding, but Veterans Affairs did receive increases in both their programs and services, and then also in Veterans Healthcare, which is the Veterans Home program. And so that's the detail between the two. At the bottom of the spreadsheet, you can just again see the numbers that sort of, that go back to the first one pager that I showed you, where the total appropriations for in the 2011 omnibus bill were $905 million compared to $914.5 million in 2013. But again, there are some, particularly in the 2013 session, that number is impacted by that removing the state auditor's office off the general fund entirely. So it's you'll have to keep that in mind, that that reduces that number.
Representative Kahn.
Yes, I'm interested when we do something like the enlistment incentive. Do we do any follow-through to see if the incentives had any effect? And they've been asked to show.
And Representative Kahn,
the increase in.
Can you speak into your microphone just to make sure, because I'm having problems hearing, yes. So that would help. Thank you.
Okay. I apologize, Madam Chair. The issue is when we do something that's specifically called incentives, so it's specifically tied to hoping something happens, what follow-up do we have to see if what we hoped happened did happen?
Ms. Roberts.
Representative Kahn, that's a good question that I'll forward to the department. I think one thing members should be aware of is that the department is actually carrying a significant balance in the enlistment incentives program, because we allow them to carry money forward across biennia. And part of that is due to the fact that the federal benefits have been so generous up to this point, and it's been difficult in some cases for since soldiers take advantage of federal benefits before the state benefits, they haven't been utilized as much as the department had been projecting. They do think that that may be changing, that it's tightening up at the federal level, so there will be increased utilization of the state enlistment incentives, but they also I believe are coming forward with a proposal to maybe use some of that balance for other purposes in the department. So I do know that they're looking at that, and I can relay that question.
Thank you.
And Representative Kahn, that's a good question for all the agencies across the board with the different legislation that we passed. So I'm glad you brought that point up.
So, Madam Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I'm sure your staff prepares questions or combined with the fiscal analysts for the agencies.
Yeah.
So maybe specifically looking at that issue might be a good idea.
That's a great idea. Thank you. Representative Lunan.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Hall, going back to the...
I'm sorry, Bob. I called on Representative Lunan first.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
If you said Bob, that would have made sense what you just did.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is regarding the public broadcast grant. The of course, I go down the column of the percentage of increases in fiscal year 13-14, and big number there, and I just assumed then that what we talked about earlier, that the basis number was smaller, and so any increase would cause a big percentage jump, but the basis number is actually relatively large. The money that we're giving them, that's in addition to, this is outside of funds that they get from the legacy, correct?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Representative Lunan, any follow-up?
Nope.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
I think I looked at you, so it is partly my fault.
Mrs. Roberts, going back to the state auditor, I know the changes that were made in the collection of fees and so forth. Where is the oversight? Does the does this committee or does the legislature still have oversight over that office? And is there a report coming back to the legislature on, you know, the fees and so forth and the budget?
Ms. Roberts?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, this committee does have oversight authority over this, the Office of the State Auditor, and there is a report that is due, I believe, this month on some of the just the facts relating to the transfer to the enterprise fund, what the revenues and expenditures are, and that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This goes back to the Legislative Retirement Fund, just because I'm understanding that there are differences between the bases from one session to the other session, and there are various increases. But in regards to that, it appears that there's about a 40% increase from the base from where the 2012 session ended to the base for 2013. And I'm wondering, I'm assuming that that has to do with expected contractual obligations and increase in the number of participating, but that does seem like a large increase from where we ended the 2012 session to where we ended up with a base for 14-15.
Ms. Roberts?
Madam Chair and Representative, that's a good eye, and I'm trying to remember exactly what the change was that we made in the 2011 session. We did restructure the funding for that a bit, and again, it was a program that was never fully funded, where all employee and employee contributions went into a dedicated account. And I believe probably Representative Nelson might, looks like he might have something to clarify on that.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I remember right, serving on the pension commissions, I have, that's a fund that, it was a pay-as-you-go fund, and so as people retired, that would go up and down. There, it was no money set aside prior to those people. Like now, employees pay into it. The employer pays into it. That wasn't set up that way. This was a pay-as-you-go fund. As they retired, their money went into that. The same with the constitutional officers. So at some point, those people will all be gone, and that fund would go to zero because there would be no more of those legislators that weren't funded into the regular pension plan.
Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the page 3 of 3 under military forces ordered to active duty, in the base from 2011-2012 and then the base 2013-2014, seems to be a substantial increase from one biennium to the next, and I'm just curious with the drawdown on forces, I'm wondering what that reflects in terms of compensation to those people.
Ms. Roberts?
Madam Chair and Representative, this line specifically relates to when the National Guard is called to state active duty. So, for example, in floods or missing person search or fires. And it's an open general fund appropriation, which means we don't directly appropriate it in the bill. You won't see a number for it in the omnibus bill. It's a statutory appropriation that's forecast based on a rolling average of the prior years. So I think what happened here was that there was increased activity in the prior years due to weather events, and that the forecast was then increased.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Roberts, can you say a little bit more about the internal service funds and how that works, the fee for service? And do we have oversight over that, or is that how does that operate?
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, there are several internal service funds that are under the authority of this committee. The Minute Services Fund would be probably the largest, and then within Department of Administration, there are other internal service funds related to plant management and travel management, surplus services, those sorts of things. And this committee, again, does have oversight over them. I would say that because they're not directly appropriated general fund, they tend to not get the same amount of attention as the general fund appropriations do when a committee is working towards meeting its target. But there's quite a bit of activity in those internal service funds that impact all state agencies, not just the agencies that are in this committee. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you may hear in other committees about minute services and how they're impacting the agencies in those committees. So I don't know if that answers your question. I can certainly get you more information on the activity within those.
Representative Johnson. Okay, very good. Any other questions from anyone? Representative Lane.
Just following up on the comment that she just made, I think we do need to hear from some of the other agencies and how MINUTE is affecting them, because I've been hearing some difficult stories.
Okay. And any kind of feedback that you can give, that'd be helpful. Appreciate that. All right. Any other questions at all on this piece? If not, we have two newcomers. And before we go on to you, Mark, if I could just interject a little bit. Earlier, Representative Kahn, Representative Earhart, we just gave brief introductions, and we all know you, yes. But if you can give us a little tidbit, I love the information, Representative Kahn, you provided in Ways and Means yesterday. If you didn't know this, this woman has run a 3:17 marathon, which I got to tell you, that's very impressive.
A long time ago.
Well, doesn't matter. Shoot, I couldn't even do that, you know, in my best years. So if you could just give us a little bit of information about yourself. And
well, the first thing, today I realized that I had never driven into the Capitol recently at this time. And I don't know if it was just today, but the traffic is horrendously worse than at other times. So I'll put that on my learning curve.
And Representative Kahn, I'm in the same boat. I haven't done this for years, so
You obviously did it better than me. So
well, I think the other members would argue against that, but I came here in the nick of time. But yes.
Anyway, I am the second longest serving member of the legislature, yielding to my colleague across the table, and I've served on this committee in many roles. I've chaired it. I was originally a member of the original State Department's division. It was a division of appropriations, but it covered about five of the existing appropriations committees at that time. And so I've chaired it, been lead, and on and off. So looking forward to being on it again.
Very good. I think you were the chair of my freshman year when I served on state government finance. Oh,
well, I hope I treated you well.
You did. Always. Representative Earhart.
I represent Edina, most of the city of Edina, and I too ran a marathon. I think the year was Otto, and it was about 7 hours and 20 minutes. So that was the only time, and I've never done it since. And I've never been served on this committee before, and it's interesting. And so I know about the late, because I served on the 8:15. Capital Investments Committee last year. And I know how difficult the morning runs are at this time, even though I left at 7:30 this morning. That was not nearly enough time because it took an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. There you are. But I'll try and get up earlier. At 5 o'clock, I think, can I miss a half, first half hour of that committee or not? But I can see that since it's brand new to me, I'll have to get here on time. You're all way ahead of me now, having heard the first half of the presentation. So there you are.
Well, I welcome Representative Earhart, and glad to hear you use the phrase ought to. I haven't heard that expression since Swiggum, so I don't know if you're channeling him today. Or
No.
Yeah, that's what I figured. All right. With that, Mr. Shepherd, do you have any other information you'd like to add to the presentation this morning, too?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Mark Shepherd from the House Research Department. In addition to appropriations, the state government finance bill traditionally contains one or more articles of statutory language, and these are matters where you have decided to change the law, either to implement some of the budget decisions you've made in the bill or to affect the operations of the agencies under your control. And Jeff Diebel is going to be working with the Committee on Veterans and Military Statutory Changes, so he'll be here for the days when you're considering those, and I'll be doing the other days. And, Madam Chair, did you want me? You had asked that we put copies of the omnibus bills from the last two biennia in the folders, and those are there. And you had suggested that I may want to go through some of the statutory changes in those.
Mr. Shepard, I think that would be helpful, and we have the time, so just to give us a little historical perspective of where we came from and where we're at today. So which handout would you like to start with, Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair, I think I'll start chronologically with the 2011 omnibus bill. In your folders at the top, it says Chapter 10, Senate File 12, mm-hmm. And I'll kind of treat these in clusters. I won't go through the whole thing, but you'll notice that the first 18 pages of that bill are all the appropriations. So all of the financial decisions that Ms. Roberts just mentioned, the first 18 pages of this bill is the language that you'll be writing a law to actually implement those financial decisions. So that's what that looks like in law form, all the appropriations. And then starting on page 18, Article 3, is some of the statutory language I was referring to. And you'll notice with the large number of accounts this committee has that these pieces of statutory language hop around from topic to topic a lot. And the order that they appear in the bill is the order that the statute of the statutory numbering. So there's no particular logic to them other than just the numbers of the statutes. So in 2011, the first part of Article 1, you'll notice, increase the number of members of the Pension Commission. So the Pension Commission went from 10 members to 14 members. And the next 20 sections 2 to 22, all dealt with the same topic. There was a Sunset Advisory Commission created and a schedule under which all agencies would be reviewed by the Sunset Advisory Commission. And these 20 sections of the bill set up that apparatus. When I get to the 2013 bill, you'll notice that this was repealed in 2013. So it just gives you a bit of historical perspective. So that's sections 2 to 22, and it actually goes over to page 26. I'll point out section 23 of the bill. This relates to the State Auditor's Office, and this section was upon the request of the City of Rochester. They wanted authority to be able to hire a private CPA firm to conduct their audit instead of having the State Auditor do it, and this was the legislation that implemented that. Section 25 was a new law. I believe this may have been a proposal of Representative Quam, where he had a bill that went through a policy committee and then it was referred to the State Government Finance Committee because of the fiscal impact, and it allowed the Commissioner of Management Budget to have a program to potentially provide bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce the costs of operating state government. Sections 26 to 28 was a new program that year that created a system that authorized the state to issue bonds to pay for certain services, with the bonds being repaid under performance-based contracts with vendors that would either result in savings or increased revenues to the state. And to the best of my knowledge, the state has not done this yet. It was a new program. There were a lot of issues with it. And if you're interested, you may want to ask the Commissioner of Management and Budget when they appear before the committee about that program. Section 29 was an example of a provision that affects all state agencies. It required that certain state contracts have to require certification from the vendor that the vendor would implement the federal E-Verify program for its newly hired employees. Sections 30 and 33.
And Mr. Shepherd's, just to interject, they have instituted that, haven't they?
Okay. Madam Chair, yes.
Great. Mr. Shepherd?
This committee shares some jurisdiction with the Tax Committee, over a legislation that affects the revenue department. The tax committee, of course, writes all the tax laws, but this committee sometimes has jurisdiction over things that affect the administration of some of the tax laws, and particularly the operations of the Department of Revenue. So section 30 to 33, roughly, of this bill was some things that the Department of affecting the State Department of Revenue, in this case affecting things like offsets from reciprocal agreements with the federal government for tax offsets for debts that are owed. And then concluding Article 3, the committee often decides to, they have one-time requirements either for studies or things that have one-time effect reports back to the legislature, and these were, if you look at beginning on page 35, there were a variety of reports that were required and some one-time provisions. At the very end of the article that year was some unique one-time provisions that related to some things that had to be done because of the government shutdown in 2011. On page 39, Article 4 of the bill is a topic that Ms. Roberts addressed and that you've asked some questions about already, which was the consolidation of information technology services in state government. There always had been an Office of Enterprise Technology, now known as MINET, but this legislation, the major substantive provision is on page 42 and 43, and it basically said that the Chief Information Officer in MINET is responsible for providing or administering a whole range of different kinds of information technology systems and services to state agencies, including the state data centers, mainframes, servers, desktops, all kinds of topics. And this was a big deal. And the employees, as Ms. Roberts indicated, that used to be employees of all various state agencies became employees of MINET. And you'll probably hear more soon from MINET about that transition and about agency concerns about it. But everything was transferred starting that year, and there was a transition period. So that was the 2011 bill. I'll now talk just briefly about the 2013 bill, which is titled Chapter 142, Senate File 1589. Again, the first article of the bill dealt with.
Before we move on from there, Mr. Shepherd, we do have Representative Kahn has a question on the 2011.
Yes, I have one point that we may want to look at and then a question on
that. Representative Kahn, can you? Thank you.
One point that we have to look at and then a question on this is that performance bonds don't require the special supermajority to pass, mm-hmm. as opposed to general revenue bonds. And is there any issue with them, in a sense, substituting for general revenue bonds? Is that something that people use to get around? I don't know if
I don't know, Mr. Shepherd, examples. Do you have any insight into that at all? Or
are they really used for totally different issues?
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, because they really haven't been used yet, I don't think we have a complete answer. But in the testimony that was given when this idea was brought forward, the idea was not to use these bonds to pay for buildings and capital projects, but to use them for things where if someone had an idea for implementing a new system that could potentially save the state a lot of money, but you didn't have the cash up front to pay for it, that perhaps you could issue bonds and then have a contract with a vendor in which the vendor would only be paid according to the performance terms of the contract, and thereby either have less spending or more revenue coming to the state. But because it hasn't been used, I don't think it was intended to be used to replace general obligation bonds for capital projects.
Representative Kahn, any follow-up to
yes,
that?
Yes, there's an interesting aspect where it almost becomes interchangeable, which is that when a building is being built, like in the Senate office building, any information structure put into that building, anything, including, I think, the buying of individual computers, can be paid for by the general obligation funds that are funding the building. But after the building is built, then that's always a separate appropriation, and you can't use general obligation
bonds to pay for those kinds of upgrades. So that's an example where you might get the same effect almost interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that I, second question that I had was on the information technology. One of the thoughts that we had when we were doing that was the waste of the fact that every agency, for example, would have its own webmaster. And it seemed that a lot of that ought to be transferable across agencies. An interesting aspect on how this bill was passed and why it was passed in 2011, Keith Downey was the chief author and I was the second author. The year before, I had been the chief author and Keith was the second author. When in 2011, when you recall that we had a DFL governor for the first time and Republicans had control of both houses of the legislature for the first time, I told Keith, this year is the only chance we have to do this, because all the department heads are new and they don't understand what an enormous turf battle this is, and all the committee chairs are new and they don't understand what an enormous turf battle this is. And we actually passed it through the House pretty easily. By the time it got to the Senate, somebody had figured it out, and so it was kind of stopped. That was the special session where we did the major appropriation bill, and the governor listed this as one of the things that couldn't go into the major appropriation bill. And I called Tina Smith, who was his aide at the time, and I said, if you kill this, you're going to have Terry Bonoff, the Senate couldn't even find a Republican author for it, Terry Bonoff, me, and Keith Downey standing up and saying that the governor's office stood in the way of the major reform we could do this session. And I got, 5 minutes later, I got a call from Tina saying, well, let's talk about this. And then as we were putting the conference committee together, Keith just said to Terry and I, you guys just work on this, and I'll take whatever you do. So that's how that got done.
Very good. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shepard, on page 29, it speaks to the authority given for the letting of bonds for the pay-performance program, and it cites a date for the during the biennium ending June 30th, 2013. Is that a hard stop on the issuance of those bonds? Have they been issued? And does that infer a sunset on this provision? Or are we to reissue those bonds or reissue the timeline for them, Madam Chair?
Mr. Shepherds.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, first, I'm a little rusty on this, but no bonds have been issued. But I believe that the date that you're referring to is provided that during that biennium the commissioner could sell bonds only in an amount that the commissioner would ensure would result in payments that are less than the savings. That I think, if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure I do, that they needed that sentence just to make sure that nothing was going out of balance for that biennium. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the program has been sunset, but it also hasn't been started.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shepard, then, in light of the fact that it's not been executed under the provisions, does that suggest that this provision has not been utilized, or have there been any paper performance requests delivered under this provision? What is the status of the program?
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, to the best of my knowledge, this has not been used. And there were some discussions last biennium about things, about the way the law was written, that might need to be changed to make it be able to be implemented. But I am going to have to check with MMB and just learn more about this. But I don't think it has been used so far.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright, was part of your question, too, to see if anybody has sought to try and utilize it, too. So we don't know if we have any data on that at all, if anybody's... Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and members, I know a little bit about this. MMB has done quite a bit of work on this project, and they did have a advisory group or task force that met several times that included, I former Representative Downey was on it, and some of the service providers that were interested in utilizing this were involved in that. They were primarily looking at using it in the areas of housing and workforce development. And I believe that an RFP did go out, but just some of the technical issues to get this to work and some needed language changes, it hasn't progressed at this point. But there has been quite a bit of work and time spent on it.
We'll have to take a look at that a little bit more closely then, too. Okay. All right. Any other questions on the 2011 review? All right, Mr. Shepherd, if you want to proceed then to 2013, you're going to go to next?
Sure. Madam Chair, the 2013 document is titled, in your packet, is titled Chapter 142, Senate File 1589. And the first 14 pages are the language that implemented all the appropriation decisions that Ms. Roberts already reviewed. Starting on page 15, the Sunset Act, that I mentioned earlier that had been enacted in 2011 was repealed, and it was replaced in this article by a requirement that a group called the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy biennially review executive branch advisory groups and make recommendations to the legislature on them. And that review occurred in the first cycle a year ago, and there was some legislation that followed on from that. The Article 3, beginning on page 17, has a variety of provisions that, as is typical, are fairly miscellaneous. The first four sections that year were some administrative things that the Legislative Coordinating Commission brought to the attention of the committee. Sections 5 to 7 were some things that the Legislative Auditor brought to the committee. Section 6, a new duty for the legislative auditor as its resources to permit to do data security audits. So that was specifically added to their statutory authority. Sections 8 and 9 related to the funding of programs in the Secretary of State's office, some agreements with local governments relating to the election system, and in Section 9, authority for the Secretary of State to accept gifts and grants for its audit or address confidentiality system. Section 10, also a state auditor provision that authorized, this was brought both by the state auditor and local governments, that allowed the auditor to charge fees for accounting software in consultation with some of these groups. Ms. Roberts mentioned the major change for the state auditor, which was that the audit functions used to be funded with a direct appropriation from the general fund, and on page 21, section 13, you see that a state auditor enterprise fund was created, so that the costs and expenses of the audits are paid from this fund now, and Ms. Roberts pointed that out on the spreadsheet, the effect that has on the general fund budget of the state. Sections 14 to 22 were some relatively minor changes in laws governing state contracting. Sections 23 to 25 related to MINUT and the authority of MINUT over state agencies and creation of an e-government advisory council. There was a question earlier about public broadcasting grants, and you see on Sections 27 to 30, there are some laws on the books that establish the requirements that both radio and TV stations have to meet to be eligible to receive these grants. Some of them are fairly technical requirements, and those were amended at the request of these stations in the 2013 bill in Sections 27 to 30. I'm going to conclude that. And Jeff is going to talk a little bit now about Article 4, which was some of the military and veterans provisions from the 2013 omnibus bill.
Mr. Diebel?
Madam Chair.
Hold on 1 second. I see that Representative Earhart has a question on the...
Madam Chair, I was going to ask a question about the state auditor. Is that appropriate at this
time? Yeah, we could do that right now. Sure, go ahead.
There was a... What is the scope of the state auditor's responsibilities? There was a request from an other than state agency, a private entity, for a audit of one of the government agencies. Is that appropriate, and are they is that it within their...
And Mr. Shepard, I think this would be a good time to talk about the differences between the state auditor and the legislative auditor. If you could kind of, we've got some new members here. If you could go over that piece, Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart and members, in general, the auditing responsibilities are broken down so that the legislative auditor audits state agencies and does a comprehensive statewide audit of the state's financial statements, and the state auditor audits units of local government, and then some of the there's miscellaneous statutes that assign some of the metropolitan agencies and other governmental units. So each auditor has, sometimes it's not even clear, and they have to sort out who should do an audit of a particular group. But I know on the legislative audit side, Mr. Nobles will do special investigations upon when things are brought to his attention by legislators or by citizens. He has discretion to do that if they involve the expenditure of state money. So he does have a regular schedule of financial audits that his office does, but he also does special investigations. So if someone does brings that to your attention, you could call him, and if he is not the right person, he would refer it on to the state auditor.
Okay, thank you.
And the websites for both the state auditor and the legislative auditor, they kind of go into a historical perspective of how these two bodies have kind of changed hands, and how it was interesting, actually. So if you're interested in it, I encourage you to go to those websites. You can read a little bit more about it and figure out where it's... we used to have a, what was it, a public examiner? Is that what they called it? I can't remember what it was called. But was eliminated as part of the process of changing things. But if... there's no other ones. We're going to go to Mr. Diebel, if you could give us the next sections.
Madam Chair and members, again, my name is Jeff Diebel. I work in the House Research Department. This is my first session staffing Military and Veteran Affairs, so I don't have any historical perspective on the provisions in the bill. I do have the privilege of serving in the Army Reserve, and so I'm hoping that my experience will allow me to get up to speed quickly. The Article 4 in the bill before you, I want to just touch on some of the subject matter that will come before Representative Detmer's committee and later before the full body here, and just give you some perspective about the range of policies that you'll be acting on. In Section 1, there's a provision that regulates the leave policies for local municipalities for those who are members of the reserve component, to give them the members of the service members more flexibility in using their 15 days of paid leave. Sections 2 through 6 regulate the County Veterans Service Office grant program. I still have quite a bit to learn about this program, but it, in a nutshell, it provides money for the counties to provide veteran services, and this these sections make some changes and modifications to that grant program. Sections 7 and 8 deal with an important benefit to service members, and previously mentioned today, the GI Bill education benefit that is... bestowed upon service members. Section 9 deals with the statute which creates a presumption that you are rehabilitated for purposes of past criminal conduct, and in this case it would bestow that benefit upon service members who were admitted to the military after having a criminal conviction but served honorably. They would be deemed in the eyes of the law to have been rehabilitated if they complete their military service and receive an honorable discharge. The section, moving to Section 10, this deals with an important issue for benefits of veteran-owned businesses, and authorizes towns and cities to give contract preferences to veteran-owned small businesses and give them, put them in a class of businesses that would if equal to others, would give them an advantage in the bidding process. Section 11 deals with an important issue of finding employment for veterans and allowing peace officer reciprocity exam to give easier access to those with prior military experience in taking exams and earning certification. And then Section 12 is repeals a law regarding the County Veterans Services Office Program that I previously mentioned.
Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair, I'll just quickly finish up with a couple of the Article 5 and 6 of the 2013 bill. Article 5 was some administrative provisions relating to the Department of Revenue. As I mentioned, these administrative things often are carried in the state government finance bill, with the substantive tax laws being in the tax bill. And then finally, Article 6 was a somewhat significant provision relating to some salaries of executive branch agency heads and of the constitutional officers. Article 6 gave a salary increase to all of the constitutional officers of 3% effective January 1 of this year, another 3% January 1, 2016. It also increased the maximum salaries for the governor's agency heads and allowed the governor to establish salaries within those maximums. So those were the two pretty significant parts of Article 6 that year.
And Mr. Shepard, do we have a list of, can we get a list then of that provided to members? Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I do have a list of all of the current agency head salaries and the salaries of elected officials, and I can perhaps send it electronically, and it can be submitted, sent to the committee members.
That'd be perfect. Thank you.
I'll just note that in the even-numbered years, there are supplemental bills because there need to be some adjustments made sometimes to the appropriations that were made in the main omnibus bills. And so in 2014, for example, we've put in your packet Article 4 of a larger bill, Chapter 312. It was a state government article. It was a very small article, both in terms of pages and in terms of its financial impact. But there were some adjustments made to small adjustments to some of the agencies in the jurisdiction of the committee. If you look at Article 4, the bulk of the language there related to an initiative that required all state agencies that issue occupational licenses to develop an expedited system for issuing licenses to active military members and their spouses when people are moving around the country. And it's a fairly simple concept, but it required amending a lot of laws to tell agencies to do that, and then a number of agencies received small supplemental appropriations to amend their rules to be able to do that.
All right. Members, any questions on the 2013, 2014, or even 2011? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Roberts, Mr. Shepard, Mr. Diebel. Appreciate the presentation today. Just to kind of give you an idea, on Thursday we will be hearing from the legislative auditor and just getting a little review. We will not have committee on Wednesday, and I think that given how much time that we have, we can start. I think that if we started our committee on Thursday at 9, that will give us enough time, and that will help us get used to the earlier time frame. So we'll start on Thursday at 9 a.m. and with the legislative auditor coming before us, Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, you just got yourself a Diet Coke from me. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And with that, members, our hearing is adjourned.